the EFL. It's the Football League podcast that stands with Gary Caldwell in the fight against belligerence. Coming up, Preston are no longer feeling low. We'll scout some EFL talent and look ahead to the weekend's action. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And we're back for week two of the season. Hope you got everything you wanted from opening day. If not, remember there's another 45 match days still to come in the EFL. It is me, Matt Davis Adams. And before I introduce my guests, let me remind you that we are delighted to have partnered up again with Quinbet for another season. And to celebrate that, they have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet up to £50 and 50 free spins. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions/sports-up-2-50. It's 18 plus and remember, always gamble responsibly. Check out gamcare.org. They're the leading provider for gambling support and they run the National Gambling Helpline. If you'd like to sign up for that offer, you'll find a link in the description of this show. So we are back and I've got my two pals with me. Adrian Clark, you've been busy at the start of this new campaign, taking it all in.
5 games in 5 days. Yeah, so it's fantastic. It's good to be busy. It's good to get out there, seeing players, seeing teams. I've loved it. Quick Gladiators update. How long, obviously, since the last pod, I've been to watch the film The Gladiators. I'm sworn to secrecy on what happened, obviously. Great drama. How long do you think it takes to record an episode of Gladiators?
Ages, I reckon, is the answer. I'm going to say, what, it's a one-hour show. Probably 2 to 3 hours.
Samuel?
4 hours, I'll raise Matt by 60 minutes.
Double it, mate. 8.
Crikey.
didn't get out till gone 9 o'clock at night. Incredible. But they did a good job of keeping us entertained. But goodness me, yeah, that is a long record. Luckily, we don't take that long for this pod.
The eliminator for the crowd as well as for those competing. Sam Parkin's voice was the other you heard there, also of Sky Sports on opening weekend, as was Adrian. Sam, I was going to say, did you enjoy opening weekend? QPR maybe put paid to that, but other than that?
Yeah, really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was a good game. Blew the cobwebs off, 2 goals inside 5 minutes at MK. So, yeah, really enjoyed it. Gorgeous day. It's too hot. Top was off yesterday in Communal Park, in the shade, admittedly. Yeah, but okay. It's too much for me. It's too much for me, this.
Would you take your top off walking down the street, or is that an absolute no-no?
That's a straight red and a considerable suspension, isn't it?
Well, that's what I thought, but yeah. So you just took it off in a park?
Yeah, but I was on the periphery of a cricket square, on the boundary. In the one bit of shade, and the only life around me was about a dozen very large deers. So I was I wasn't certainly not showing off the once athletic physique.
So nobody shouted, "How's that?" as you stood by the cricket pitch topless. Good. Well, everybody's come for the topless Sam content, but they're also here for some football. So we'll get into that next, starting with news. And it is quite a short news section, but maybe not a hugely surprising one. Ryan Lowe and Preston have called it a day after just one game of the new campaign. That was North End's home defeat against Sheffield United on Friday night. Chairman Peter Ridsdale spoke to the BBC and said, "He told me he wanted a break, a change. We've accepted that, shaken hands and agreed on what basis he goes. The fact he's gone, we didn't initiate it and we have to decide whatever next." Interesting wording there, Sam. We've agreed on what basis he goes. Presumably that means you can't just walk into another job next week. It's a little bit strange, all this.
Yeah, a little. Yeah, the timing's really strange. I'm not surprised that Ryan Lowe's no longer the Preston North End manager, because I probably anticipated that happening maybe in the early months of this season. I think once the good feeling, the goodwill from supporters has gone, then you're always fighting a bit of a losing battle, unless they would have started like a house on fire like they did in previous seasons under Ryan Lowe. So I'm not surprised that he's no longer the manager. Timing, absolutely. But I think it's the right decision, and you have to take him at his word. And I think probably he didn't probably get a decent reception, of course, from the supporters on Friday. And that's probably just made that decision for Ryan. I think that's probably what it is. If they'd have won the game, then maybe it would have papered over some cracks for a few weeks. But obviously that ill feeling, I think, has been towards the manager for a while now. And, you know, watching the football last year, he certainly gets it right defensively, or has got it right defensively with that team previously. But the attacking output is severely lacking, in my opinion. Could he have been getting more? I think at times last season, yes. And some of that will be down to recruitment. It doesn't all fall at his door. Absolutely not. I'm not saying that. And I have no doubt that Ryan Lowe will go into another really good job, no question, because of his track record. But I think, you know, the football and some of the performances that I witnessed in the flesh, I thought that it was frustrating, and I thought that it was a little bit negative. And I think that was probably the sentiment of the majority inside Deepdale, who, let's not forget, have had to suffer, I think, 5 straight defeats end of last season, and obviously another game where they haven't scored to kickstart this new one.
So Mike Marsh in charge for the midweek Carabao Cup tie and the game at Swansea on Saturday. I thought, Clarkey, there was no immediate standout candidate. As we record, the favourite is David Moyes. He's not dropping into the Championship. Just to go back to Preston, is he? Paul Heckingbottom maybe a bit more realistic?
Yeah, that's definitely a more realistic option. I mean, the romantic choice would be David Moyes, wouldn't it? Going back to where it all started. I just don't think you go from sort of playing in European finals with West Ham to then taking up the Preston job, which is, you know, not a plum Championship job because the budget is pretty skinny there. We know that. They don't have a lot of money to spend. So I can't see it happening unless David just wants to, you know, have a fond sort of return there. It would be the boost the club needs, wouldn't it? Blimey. I think Heckingbottom would be an excellent choice. I really do. I think that he did a great job, didn't he, at Sheffield United. And I think his ego isn't so big that he wouldn't be prepared to go in at Preston and back himself coaching wise to make the most of that budget. A lot of managers will only go somewhere where they get a decent amount to spend. I think Heckingbottom will, yeah, he knows he's a good coach. He would probably bring a slightly better brand of football as well. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they do moving forwards. Mike Marsh, used to play with him at Southend, great guy. But I would imagine he's fairly linked to Ryan Lowe, and he'll follow him wherever he ends up next. So yeah, not a surprising change, but I think it feels like an emotional one from Ryan Lowe, where he's maybe had doubts throughout the summer, maybe kept it to himself about, am I really enjoying this? He's turned up for the first game and he's got, you know, pelters from the fans. It's not gone the way he wanted, and he's reacted to it. Yeah, from Preston's point of view, they would probably wish he would have maybe stepped aside at the end of last season, when, of course, they lost 5 on the bounce without scoring. That runs now at 6.
Okay, we'll wait and see then who his successor is. Transfer window still very much open and very active. And Sam, I mentioned that QPR had let you down at the weekend. Maybe they've cheered you up a bit with additions to the squad at Loftus Road, and one in particular that caught my eye.
Yeah, I don't know too much about the attacking midfielder, Koki Saitu. I hope I've done something reasonably good with that. I'm sure someone will correct me. And Karamoko Dembele, who I am more familiar with, absolutely needed a little bit more creativity and goal threat in the side. I think that was severely lacking, certainly when I saw them against Brighton again at the weekend in the home defeat to West Bromwich Albion. But yeah, Dembele, it kind of made me think of that period when you had Chris Willock and Elias Chair together in the side, and they could maybe do something akin to that, albeit you don't really get the attacking impetus from Jimmy Dunn at right back in particular. But Dembele loves to come into little pockets of space off the wing, get turned, take people on. He's terrifically talented, technical footballer. And the numbers were brilliant at Blackpool, albeit, you know, a division below. 9 goals and 14 assists last season. I think he comes in and immediately has a shout to be starting games, given that you've got a young kid playing wide at the moment for Rangers, and Willock left in the summer, and they need a little bit more going that way. So yeah, really excited by that. They brought in Varane as well from Sporting Gijón, I think it was, a central midfield player. So I think all of a sudden, you know, 3 players of good pedigree, albeit I've only seen one of them, who strengthened that squad, and hopefully it is going to be the season that Rangers fans are anticipating, which is one of much improvement from what they got last season.
Interesting. There do seem to be a lot of transfers from elsewhere in Europe into the Football League. Just looking down the list, Kelechi Nwankwo from Chaves to Barnsley and Mipo Odebeko from Maritimo to Fleetwood. Good luck.
Don't come to me about those, please.
You've already done a scouting report on them, I know. Come on then, Clarkie, give us one that's caught your eye.
I've got a couple of quickies. Tyrese Campbell has rocked up at Sheffield United from Stoke, and I think that's a really exciting move for him because he needed to have a fresh start. I think, you know, injuries have plagued his time at Stoke, haven't they? He's missed so many matches in recent seasons and has never really recaptured the brilliance that we saw back, it's about 5 years ago now that he first broke onto the scene as a bit of a whiz kid, as a teenager. I think he's got 9 goals in 18 starts in 2019-20 season. He's never topped that. And the reason he hasn't topped that, I think, is because he's suffered so many injuries. It's a great move for him because Sheffield United, I think, are going to be right up there this season. I love the business that they've done this summer. And with Gus Hamer and Callum O'Hare as part of a midfield with it features Andre Brooks as well, you know, you're going to get some decent ammunition, I would imagine, as a forward player. So yeah, good luck to him. He's had a horrible time, obviously, with his dad, Kevin Campbell, tragically passing away not too long ago. It's been an awful period for him, but nice fresh start at Bramall Lane, and I think that's potentially a good move. I just hope he can stay fit. The other one that's caught my eye is Dane Scarlett. He's gone to Oxford on loan. Dane is a bit of a whiz kid at Spurs. He's played first team football there. He's been on the bench a lot. But when he's gone on loan, it hasn't happened for him. He didn't score on loan at Ipswich last season. At Pompey, he played quite a lot of games, but only got 4 goals. It's sort of his taste of the EFL hasn't been productive. It's sort of been had a negative impact on his reputation. He's now 20, so he's still very, very young, but maybe he has the maturity now to be able to handle a loan spell in the EFL a little bit better. So at Oxford, he's got a good chance of playing. You know, Mark Harris is the number one striker, but he's got opportunities to play. So I hope it goes well for Dane Scarlett at the Kazan.
We'll keep an eye on those guys as the season progresses, and the season is progressing all the way to week 2. We're going to have a look at some of the key fixtures next. And we'll start at Turf Moor, where Burnley face Cardiff. Now then, Clarkie, Burnley only won 2 home league games throughout last season. Yeah. You get the feeling they might win a few more this time around. You saw them live and in living colour at Kenilworth Road, where they really impressed / dismantled Luton Town on Monday.
They dismantled them, yeah. They did the job on them. It was clinical. It really was. But my overall takeaway is that Scott Parker has already made an impression on the players, that he's got them really working for him. I was impressed with the intensity of their football. They pressed.
Oh, you were going straight in with a bomber jacket there.
Oh, mate, the bomber jacket. I couldn't really see it because I was sort of on the gantry. He was a bit away to my right. I thought it looked a little bit rascal from where I was. He obviously went navy, didn't he? Which was an interesting. It kind of looked like a boiler suit almost from where I was sat. But it was more the hair that stood out for me, Sam.
I was concerned it was a Burnley bit of merchandise initially when he came out. I was relieved it wasn't.
What was going on with the Barnet? Because it looked a little bit moulé to me. I mean, I don't know what it was close up. I didn't get to see it close up.
Well, look, it's a low bar for him to clear, isn't it? Because Company's touchline gear was absolutely disgraceful last season. So
it was very 90s, late 90s suit and baseball cap. I think I went down that route.
I was on a podcast earlier today, not an EFL podcast, don't worry, but where a colleague of mine said that good-looking managers that wear trendy clobber have a better chance of getting good jobs. Discuss. I don't think I'm having that.
Not in the EFL, definitely.
I don't think I'm having that. But anyway, we digress. It was a great debut for him. It was a great debut for Scott Parker because I think tactically he outwitted Rob Edwards. They were up against a pretty young back three, or a very young back three, and they undid them twice with sort of identikit goals, you know, dragging a wide centre-back towards the flank, opening up a hole and then running, surging in there with a midfield runner. On both occasions, the full-backs picked out the run from deep and in they went for the 1v1s, which they dispatched. Their pressing was excellent during the game. And they played with a real intensity. And I think Burnley's bench really sort of, yeah, it's told you plenty about their strength. You know, Weghorst comes off the bench, Aruri, McNally, you know, Benson didn't even come off the bench. So, yeah, they're going to be there or thereabouts, and they'll rock up at Turf Moor with real confidence, won't they? Even though they had that shocking record in the Premier League there, the fans will turn up on the back of that 4-1 pasting, thinking, well, we're going to dismantle Cardiff City. And look, based on the evidence of what we saw from Cardiff, that they've got a good chance of doing that. Just a quick one on Burnley, what I thought stood out, apart from what I've mentioned, I think Colioscio was superb. He did come off with an injury, so we'll keep an eye on that. The new signing at left back, Lucas Pires, I'm really impressed by him. Excellent pass for the opening goal. And in general, I thought he looked excellent, as did O'Shea and Estev at the back. I thought they were pretty decent against, obviously, a good partnership in Morris and Adebayo. So that bodes well. I think lots and lots of positives for Burnley. Cardiff had a bit of a shocker, didn't they, on the opening day, losing 2-0 at home to Sunderland. Chris Willock did all right by all accounts. The takeaway from Cardiff's end, I think, is that in that match, at least, they're looking to be more of a possession-based team. You know, they had, I think, almost 70% of possession against Sunderland, which is quite remarkable, really. Lots and lots of patient football, playing through the thirds. The problem they're going to find in this game, having seen Burnley, is that Burnley are going to harass them with proper hostility. And if this style is a little bit new to them, which it is, then they're going to have to be careful, because I think Burnley will be onto them. There's every chance I could envision Burnley winning the ball high up the pitch here and hurting them, because they've got serious pace with those three behind the main striker of the Claretts. So Cardiff are going to have to be miles better than what they were on opening day to come away with anything other than a respectable defeat, in my opinion. I think Burnley are heavy favourites there.
Pick of a trip as well for the away supporters. Might not be a great day out. West Brom versus Leeds is the game you've plumped for, Sam. Josh Madger's hat-trick fired the baggies to opening day victory at QPR. Leeds thrilled us in that 3-3 with Pompey. And you were so close to your Brendan Aaronson shout coming off. And he let you down, didn't he, with the last kick of the game. How are you feeling about that and this?
I'm feeling that there's quite a few games to go, Matthew. So you can ask me in 30 games' time, mate.
And that would not have stopped you crowing had he put that away in the last minute. Well,
two in injury time, I might have said something, yeah. Delighted with the first, not so much the second. Yeah, just tried to be a little bit precise. Can you imagine the Portsmouth bench when he got in for that opportunity? Oh, that must have been such a desperate second or two until it just missed the post. Yeah, they were part of an amazing game, looked like great fun. I don't think you can critique it too much when you consider they had so many opportunities prior to going in front. So they'll have to sharpen up defensively. I thought it was interesting, kind of Bogan and Firpo, the fullbacks. It was an area that maybe questioned for Leeds last year at times, that you didn't get much kind of attacking output. I think you're going to get that. Maybe it was to their detriment a little bit at the weekend. Bogle caught out for two of the goals. So maybe teething problems there, but I think they're going to be very attacking. And this was the type of game, if you remember back to last season, that they lost quite frequently away against decent sides. I remember them losing at Stoke, goal to nil, at Sunderland by a goal to nil. They lost this game at the Hawthorns by the same margin. So I think this is a big game early on, and kind of fancy West Brom in this to do maybe what they did last season. I thought we saw evidence of obviously how difficult they'll be to score against at QPR. Kind of low margin game, not loads in it. Fellows was excellent in the second half. Hegum seems to be getting a lot of plaudits, kind of 6 foot plus central defender, left footed, who played fullback and did a bit of a job on Paul Smith. So he looks to be a fine signing, but the rest of it is kind of as is. And then we come on to Madger, who, I mean, last season you would say the final piece in the West Bromwich Albion jigsaw to get in the playoffs would have been an out and out poacher. And he has got the quality, no question. You think back to what he was doing a few years ago at Sunderland, subsequently at Bordeaux, he got a good return when he first went there. He could be that man. So exciting for West Bromwich Albion fans. I suppose, can he maintain it? Can he produce consistently? And have they got the depth at the moment? That would be my two questions. But yeah, I would not be surprised at all if this was one of Leeds' kind of frequent early season sloppy performances away from home.
Yeah, I went to this game last year. Leeds were crap. Honestly, they were awful. Yeah, and they just kept booming it. They kept going, trying to beat the high line with balls over the top to their quickies, and it just didn't work. And your West Brom were worthy winners. So, yeah, I think you could be onto something there. Josh Maguire, by the way, never scored more than three in a season in English football.
Well, he's got a long time to break that record then.
I mean, amazing.
One news line from West Brom that really made me laugh. Jason Malumbi has been banned for 5 friendlies for punching an opponent in a behind closed doors game. So he can play in this match, no problem. He can play in the league, but the next 5 friendlies.
Right.
How's that even going to be enforced?
That would have been music to my ears.
Oh, seriously. Oh,
going to Spain next pre-season and just having a jolly. Just do the training and then just sit with your flip-flops on. Top off, probably, Clark.
Yeah. I imagine there might be a trialist A on West Brom friendly team sheets next pre-season. We'll wait and see on that. All right, let's head into League One next. So Mrs. Clark asked Adrian to take a day off, but he said, tough sheet, as in, sorry, darling, I'm off to Bolton versus Wrexham. This looks like a great game on paper. Phil Parkinson back on his old patch. His new team looking to reprise that absurd Jack Marriott goal that they got last week. And Bolton also victors on opening day. They've made a couple of signings as well. This ought to be decent.
Yeah, I'm basically out all weekend. Arsenal Saturday. Bolton, yeah, it's not going to go down well. But yeah, no, it should be a great game, actually. Bolton weren't great. They won, obviously, at Leighton Orient, but they really were reliant on the goalkeeper, Nathan Baxter, who's had a few good loan spells, hasn't he, with Harl and I think it was Accrington before that. He was ex-Chelsea, isn't he, Nathan Baxter?
He is.
I think he's finally left Chelsea, made a permanent move to Bolton, and he's had a brilliant start. So, yeah, I think, you know, a lot of questions still, I think, for Ian Everett to answer. When, interestingly, obviously, into the last season, disaster at Wembley, outplayed by Oxford despite being favourites. And I wondered, would he rip up his tactical blueprint and start again? Well, just didn't really. He's brought in a lot of new players, but it's still the same, really, a 3-4-1-2 or 3-4-2-1, depending on sort of one of the forwards dropping in. So, yeah, not too much different. They've got a new left wing back, Sean, who did okay, I think, by all accounts. But it was the goalkeeper that was the hero here, because Leighton Orient's goalkeeper he basically gifted the winning goal to Adebayo, and that's why they got the 3 points. Wrexham were probably a little bit more impressive, certainly with the football, because I think we know of Wrexham as being corners, free kicks, long throws, etc., get the ball into the box, but they scored a couple of lovely goals here. The Jack Marriott strike was brilliant in itself, with on the sort of right foot outside of the right foot volley, but the build up into the front man knocks it down for Marriott was lovely, and they had a good build up in before Fletcher's goal that won it for them as well. So maybe looking to bring in a little bit more of that Wrexham as they move forward, as they go up a tier. So yeah, I think this is going to be a fascinating match. Bolton will look to out-football Wrexham, and Wrexham will have got to be able to handle that and then create moments of their own. I think we could see goals here. It's obviously the Phil Parkinson derby as well, so it'd be interesting to see what kind of reception Phil gets at the tough sheet, as you rightly called it. So yeah, we'll have a better idea. By the way, going back to Luton Burnley, I wouldn't write off Luton, because I think there were mitigating circumstances with player availability there. So I wouldn't suddenly say Burnley are definitely going to finish above Luton there. I think here we'll get an idea of who's genuinely going to be at the top. I think Bolton will be full start. I think they'll be there or thereabouts. But if Wrexham can go there and be a match for Bolton and create chances and be solid defensively, then my take that playoffs would be a success for them might need to be revised, because, you know, maybe they can do a little bit better than that, Wrexham, if they can go to a place like Bolton and basically be the better side. So I'm really fascinated to see how they fare.
Sam, in terms of tactics, what have you got planned to make sure that you can steal a march on Clarkie in the queue for the Pies at halftime at the Tough Sheet on Sunday?
Breaking news. Again, I did it last time. No, I didn't. I'm going to be there as well, Clarkie.
So oh, mega. Lovely.
See you then.
Lovely, lovely.
And we cannot do this section without saying Wrexham goal of the week, wasn't it? Jack Marriott.
Yes, we guy. Have said it. I lavish praise on it. Clarkie did likewise. Elliot Lee, Ollie Palmer, Jack Marriott. We called it, Sam. We said that because he scored against Chelsea in pre-season, he was going to have a good campaign. And he did, indeed. Reading versus Wigan leaps off the fixtures page to you, Sam. It's being called the deduction derby in my house. Are you going to give it a less reductive, less last season label?
I've got nothing that is going to roll off the tongue, pun wise, but the potentially two outstanding managers derby. I think two really exciting young coaches. I think Ruben Selles goes very much under the radar. And I think when you consider they finished, 9 points from the drop last season, I think it was outstanding. Unless I'm going crazy at this stage of the season, I think they're the only EFL side that haven't made a signing, which makes that performance at Birmingham even more impressive. I think with and without the ball, aggressive, you know, from the outset, you know, really set a tempo and tried to nick the ball. I think clever game plan, you know, kind of funneling it wide, making Birmingham work to try and progress the ball up the pitch. And I think it worked really well. 26% of the ball scribbled down this morning, which shows that the second half was very much a kind of rearguard action from Reading. But I think they got good quality. I wanted to talk about Ben Elliott, who we know from Chelsea, Matt, who played wide, I think, initially at Reading, but playing a bit more central now and got wing and Harvey Nibbs, two more experienced guys with him, good players. You know, vast EFL experience. Harvey Nibbs, even though he's only 25. And yeah, he's showing good defensive nous now, Elliot. And good capability that he's can be a good player in the Championship. So yeah, I think they are looking like they could upset some people this year. And I think Wigan, I feel the same. I think they're a little bit short in some positions. When you think that they lost, off the top of my head, I haven't got it in front of me, Charlie White, Humphreys as well. They lost, I think, three or four front players and they haven't really been replaced at this point. So I think they're going to have to do some business there if they can, because at the moment they're going with two 20-year-olds. Young lad C, I think that's his name, and Hugo, 20-year-old on loan from Man United. But despite that defeat against Charlton, did okay. In that first game, just lacked a little bit of end product. I think just one shot on the target. So I think this game will likely be very easy on the eye, and two teams that will probably surprise a few this season.
Let's take a little break here. When we come back, we'll go into League Two. Now then, Rodney Parade. It's what Del Boy asked his brother to do to promote their wares down the market. And it's where Doncaster Rovers will be travelling this weekend to take on Newport, who conceded a 96th minute winner at Cheltenham last weekend. Adrian, they're under new management at boardroom and touchline level. Is that enough to get them out of the funk they've been in recent years? Doesn't feel like that long ago that Mike Flynn was leading them to various cup exploits and they were, you know, a lot of people's second team, and it's all gone a bit flat of late.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, obviously it was a strange day for Michael Flynn, obviously as the new Cheltenham manager, to beat the club that he still, no doubt, still loves in Newport with the late goal. But yeah, a new era really. Rodney Parade, Nelson Jardim is in there, and he's promising a new brand of football, more attack minded, more possession based. And they did have more of the ball than Cheltenham in the game, a lot more passing through the lines. And I think that there were signs of real, you know, promise there. You know, we're 2-0 down. They show good character, good spirit to pull it back to 2-2, playing some decent football. And then they're done at the end by the sucker punch. And, you know, these things can happen. So, yeah, there'll be some optimism, I think, at Newport. I still think it'll be a really tough season for them. But the fans might have liked what they saw, I think, at the weekend. But this is pretty much as tough as it gets with Doncaster coming to town, because Donny, as we know, we're a force to be reckoned with towards the end of last season, and they got off to a flyer themselves, beating Accrington, who I think will struggle this season, but they beat them, you know, 4-1. Some good goals in there. Luke Molyneux, who we've talked about before, scores an absolute screamer. Jordan Gibson as well scores a great goal from central midfield. Billy Sharp, the veteran, goes back to Donny and comes off the bench and scores. You know, They've scored
250th goal in English football. What a
amazing
record.
Yeah, it's just brilliant. It's great to see Billy Sharp still playing. You know, I heard 2 or 3 years ago from someone that sort of knew him that he was a bit disillusioned at Sheffield United. You know, he's fed up not really playing when they're in the Premier League. He's just thinking about packing it in. But he didn't, and he stuck with it, and he's been out on loan. He went to Hull. He went abroad, didn't he? I think. And then he went to Hull, and now he's rocked up at Donny. And I think he's got a part to play there, actually, Billy Sharp. He still knows where the net is. He's kept himself in good nick. And I do feel that Doncaster are going to score a lot of goals this season. They've got great momentum behind them and players in the final third that have delivered, not just across the last 12 months, but throughout their careers. So I think they've got guys they can rely on to score. So, yeah, I think Donny might be a little bit too powerful for Newport here, but we'll see. They've got Richard Wood at the back and Anderson. I think that's a really good partnership, but you know, Wood's knocking on a little bit, maybe not the most mobile, maybe Newport's new style of play might unsettle that kind of rear guard. So we'll have to see. But you know, based on the evidence of what we saw in match week one, Donny should go to South Wales and come away with 3 more points.
You'd think so. Might be a little bit closer in the game you're going to speak about in League Two, Sam. Now, I wondered if Carlisle v Barrow was a derby, but then I did a route planner and they're 85 miles apart, so absolutely not.
Carlisle's nowhere near anywhere, let me tell you.
It's not, but Barrow, Inverness, it's all kind of Lake District-y, isn't it? Come on, Sam, save me. Say something more interesting about this game.
I'm not particularly au fait with a rivalry, but I would suggest it is a Cumbrian derby, is it? Is it not?
Yeah, I think they see it as one because it's the only one they have, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. They've not beaten them in the league, Barrow, that is, since 1960. I think I've nailed my prep there. There's only been 12 games in the league, granted, and they did beat them, I think, in the Football League Trophy a couple of years ago. But yeah, it's a game that they definitely have waited a while to taste victory. I think, you know, this is a game where I think Paul Simpson, the Carlisle manager, needs a result, I think. Given that they lost comfortably at Gillingham, I think it flattered the Gills, actually, the opening day, when you look at the statistics and maybe the first half performance of Carlisle. But I think this is a game with new owners and with some backing in the transfer market in January and the summer. I mean, they brought in some decent players. You think of Ethan Robson, he's been at high level. Terrell Thomas from Charlton, I think, latterly. Aaron Hayden was one to stand out to me in the summer from Wrexham, and Charlie White, who I've mentioned already today. And that's to go with some kind of eye-catching signings during last season. So I think there is a bit more expectation on Carlisle this season than you would have had under the previous ownership. And it was a disappointing way to start the season. But I think if you factor in, I think, 4 out of the back 5 are new signings, it's probably going to take a little bit of time. And no surprise to see John Mellish's name flashing up on the scoreboard, because he's always good for a goal, you know, kind of irrelevant of where he plays. But that kind of sums it up, doesn't it? It's a new team, need a bit of time, but I would suggest with the new owners that, you know, Paul Simpson will be desperate to hit the ground running, despite his huge success over the years. And I think with Barrow, just a bit uncertain, really, isn't it? You know, they were so good at home. I think only 3 teams lost fewer games at home last season. Pete Wild, for all sense and purposes, did a really good job there. So it's interesting that they've got a change of manager. Stephen Clements was brought into Gillingham to improve the fare, improve the style of football, be more free scoring. I don't think he achieved that, but obviously he was kind of inheriting a squad that wasn't built for that. So it's going to be interesting to see how they looked. I think still really organising their opening day win over Crewe, inevitably. Crewe had more of the ball, but some eye-catching signings as well. Conor Mahoney and Ben Jackson from Huddersfield. So they've been, you know, part of a championship squad in recent times. Theo Vassell from Salford. And I think, you know, me and Clarkey spoke about the forward options there. Emil Aqua, Dom Telford. You know, they had the makings of a decent front line and some good attacking options last season. So I would be surprised if they can emulate what they did last year. But I think they'll be certainly hard to beat. And this one, I think you're right, Matt. I think it's a tight game. And I think for the victor, it'll be a real sweet one. And it'll be, I think, tough for the Carlisle fans to lose, you know, 2 on the bounce after, you know, decent expectation that they can have a good season.
Next today, we are going to revive a much-loved feature. It's called The Scouting Report, and it's where my two experts pick out a player that they've seen that they want to tell you a little bit more about. Clarke, you were at that fabulous opening night win for Mansfield at Barnsley, and there was a young man there who caught the eye.
Yes, there was. I mean, a lot of players played very, very well for Mansfield that night. But yeah, Keanu Backus is actually a full Australia international. Nigel, I spoke to Nigel Clough afterwards and he said, look, it's not every day of the week, you know, we get to sign a full international. And this player, Keanu Backus, is decent. Let me tell you, he is 26, so he's not a kid. He's been playing in Scotland last year. I think he had last couple of years for St Mirren, did very, very well for them. To describe him as a player, he played on the right side of their midfield diamond and he looks mega sharp. You know, he's very, very bright, quick across the turf, quick to the loose ball. But what really stood out to me was his sharpness sort of on the ball. You know, he'd drop a shoulder, beat a player and then travel with it. He'd play little 1-2s, makes good runs from that right side of centre or midfield into the wide areas. And he got himself into those positions quite a lot, especially in the first half of the game. And he delivers quality. His cross ultimately set up the winning goal for Lee Gregory. Beautiful right-footed cross. And I just thought, hang on, this guy looks very much at home. He looks stand out. And it wasn't easy to stand out because obviously on the other side, they had Luke O'Connell, who's an excellent midfielder for Barnsley. Those two were excellent on the night. So yeah, Keanu Backus, 26 years of age. I think he's a coup for Mansfield. I think they've got themselves a good one there. And Nigel said to me afterwards that he's not fully fit yet, which is why he didn't last the 90. He said once he gets up to peak fitness, he's going to be a real influence in matches week in, week out. So yeah, Keanu Backus, definitely a player to watch at Mansfield.
All right. Nigel Clough went to the board and said Backus, and they did. In a very real sense. Now then, Sam, everybody loves it when a footballer's son appears on the radar, and that's who you've picked for yours.
Mate, I had Callum Kavanagh, son of Graham, and I had Callum Hendry, son of Colin, in one game. Can you imagine? When I saw that team sheet, I was desperately searching for others.
Callum, a very good early noughties baby name, clearly.
Yeah, like we normally do before like 23s games, isn't it, Matt? Like, you know, normally you have a few famous offspring. Anyway, Callum Kavanagh, unfortunately, probably was a little bit in Hendry's shadow, I would say, even though Callum Kavanagh was on the winning side. I didn't think he had a particularly good game. However, he comes into this season, I think, with real high hopes. Him and Bobby Poynton, a local kind of Bradford lad. Having has been signed from Middlesbrough. It's a kind of well-trodden path, I think, that Middlesbrough to Bradford. It's been done by some of the current squad and previous members as well. But yeah, he was really good back in the last season. I think 7 goal involvements in his 11 starts, 5 goals, 2 assists. So they're expecting him to be a big part of what should be a much improved Bradford challenge this year. The shape was interesting, 3-5-1-1. So he is the one playing off Andy Cook. So it's almost a kind of diamond midfield with one sitter, 2 advance, and he kind of floats about. But naturally against MK Dons, they didn't see a lot of the ball, Bradford, despite racing into that 2-goal lead. So it was hard for him to get on the ball. He kept coming short. Naturally, they were looking for Cook, but invariably they were under pressure when they were clearing the ball and the quality into Cook wasn't great. So he didn't see loads of it until around about the half hour mark. Then he actually started making some runs in behind Cook, which I thought was good awareness from him. He set up Cook for a good chance on his left foot, ran the channels intelligently a couple of times, but it wasn't a great day for him. He's got decent pace. I think he's going to be one that's more technical and ball into his feet, manipulating it away from people, probably a creator. So he'll have better days, but yeah, I'm excited to see how him and Poynton go this season, because I think there's high hopes that those two are going to be two really important parts to getting them where they want to be, Bradford. And it's there's a lot of good options in that midfield, and I think a lot of the supporters would like to see those two in tandem. So not his best day, but going to keep an eye on him across the months ahead.
All right, Callum Kavanagh and Keanu Backus, tell your mates. Nearly done for the day. Of course, I've got a tweet of the week for the chaps to run the rule over. Nothing spectacular about this week's effort. I just thought that it hit all the key points, Clark. It's Luke 09, who I am predisposed to, like, because you saved the drowning Labrador from the sea a couple of years ago. You'll remember that, no doubt. He says, this is after Sunderland's victory at Cardiff that we referenced earlier, great start to the campaign from the boys in Welsh flag emoji. Thank you, travelling fans, four exclamation marks, red heart emoji, white circle emoji, plus a couple of accompanying pictures. What I like about it, Adrian, is that he's done the heart emoji where normally it would just be a red circle emoji. That's a nice bit of detail to say he loves Sunderland, who famously play in red and white. And he's gone for the flag rather than just saying at Cardiff or in Wales. It's route one, but there's a bit of cheeky fun to it.
Yeah, look, he's an experienced social media presence, isn't he? He's a bit of a pro, Luke O'Dwyer, and he knows how to play the people. I've seen him at games. He's that bloke that signs every autograph. He's the one. If he's there an hour, he's there an hour. You know, everyone else will have to wait. So he is a decent fella and a bright lad. And he doesn't rush his tweets. He thinks them through. Good use of emojis. And he's also obviously tapped up the club photographer for a couple of great images. Really, really nice photos of him sort of celebrating the two goals on the day. So it's not funny. It's just good. Well played, Luke.
Should probably change his name to Luke Canine. Given his
you did that last season, mate. As you said it,
I'll be doing it until the day he or I retires, whichever comes first. And I'm starting to think it might be me. What bothers me about it, Sam, is the first reply. You got hundreds saying good win today, the best is yet to come, all this kind of thing. Chris Dawson straight in there. Make sure you convince Jack Clark to stay. I mean, come on, Luke's just trying to celebrate a victory.
Yeah, I find it all a bit contradictory because I would agree that the images are lovely. But I would suggest that Luke's maybe been conducting his interviews, maybe signing autographs, maybe got his nose in a good book. And the writing's actually a little bit rushed, isn't it? You'd expect, you know, better maybe from Luke in terms of the message. But the pictures, especially the one with Jack Clark's a dream. But I'd imagine he's a busy man post-match and he was probably enjoying a good novel rather than a game of cards. And you just had to get that one out there.
2.2K likes at the time of recording speaks for itself, Luke would argue back there, I think. Okay, we're going to do some predictions before we leave you. Before we do that, let me remind you that our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins. It is for new customers at sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions/sports-up-2-50. It's 18 plus. And remember, always gamble responsibly. Check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support and run the National Gambling Helpline. If you would like to take advantage of that offer, just click on the link in the description of this show. You can find us on X at EFL What There. We're on other social media podcast platforms at What The EFL. And if you'd like to leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, that would help us out too. Sam got the best review from last week's predictions because you got 2 points, Sam. Sheffield Wednesday, Plymouth, we all went for a home win. I was agonisingly close. I went for 3-0. So we all got 1 point there. Nobody got the correct score, which was 4-0. Peterborough, Huddersfield. Clarkie and I both had it pegged as a draw. Sam, you went for the away win. You were victorious. That's what got you over the line. MK Bradford, we all got wrong. So well done, Sam. You're leading the way. Let's therefore let you go first with this week's game.
So how's it going to work? Is it a points tally or is it 1-0 Sam in weeks? How are we going to do this?
I think it's got to be a points tally, albeit I've just given myself a whole lot more admin than I didn't really want.
So 2-1-1.
Yeah.
I'll make a note of it. Don't worry.
Okay. 2-1-1. Right. Whilst you're in front, you'll keep making a note of it, I'm sure, religiously. Derby against Middlesbrough from the Championship then. Sam, what are you thinking?
I think it could be a difficult start for Derby next few weeks. I think they will rally and be competitive. I'm going to go for Borough to start with 2-1-0 wins. 1-0 Borough.
Okay. Appealing to my better nature there by predicting Derby to lose. I'll go for, just a bit of fun, isn't it, Lister? I'll go for 0-4. Don't like Derby. Adrian, what about you?
I was going to go for 1-0 as well, but I'll change it because, you know, I've got points to catch up. So I'm going to go Derby 0. Borough 2.
Oof. Nobody even giving the Rams so much as a goal.
Gambler, isn't he? He's a gambler.
Remember, listener, we are playing for kudos here, so it is pretty important stuff. What about then, Adrian, in League One, a London derby, Charlton versus Leighton Orient, Jones versus Richie Wellett.
Yeah, look, I think Charlton obviously won at Wigan, Orient lost, but played quite well against Bolton. So I think Leighton Orient will feel encouraged. And look, you don't win every game, do you? So I'm going to go with Charlton to drop points in this game, even though they'll be favourites. I'll go for Charlton 1, Leighton Orient 1.
Okay. Sam, any advance on a 1-1 draw?
I will back Nathan Jones to do lots of whooping up the crowd. I think they were really hard to beat under him at the Valley back in the last season. So I'm going to go for Orient to start slow again, like they did last year. Charlton 2-0, I'll have.
Okay. I'll go for 3-1. Because I also think it'll be a home win. Bromley v Wimbledon is the last game that I've got on my list. It's not a derby, that one, is it? We can't get into all that again. But anyway, they're not that far apart. I'll go first here, and I am going to give this one as a 1-1 draw. Adrian?
Well, I've actually done a bit of research here. Something struck a chord to me that Wimbledon are pretty solid away from home. And yeah, they were last year. Obviously, it was 4-2 on the opening day, so goals galore. Often there's a reaction to that, so I think they'll tighten up. They got 9 away clean sheets last season, AFC Wimbledon. Pretty impressive, I think, that record. And I think they're going to do that here. I think they're going to spoil the Bromley party to a degree. They're going to keep a clean sheet, and they're going to win 1-0 at Bromley.
Wow, okay. Sam, you might feel an obligation to tip an away win here, given that you have a close relationship with the manager. Let's see if that extends to predictions.
No bias here, mate. I completely agree with Clarkey with his sentiment there. So I'm going to have to do what he did with the first fixture. I think after the Lord Mayor show, insert cliche, but I think my man Michael Cheat will score again. I'll go for a 2-1 Dons win.
Okay, 1-2 in favour of the away side there. We'll keep you up to date with how we're getting on. Let us know if you like your predictions for those games too at AFL What There, as I say, on X. We're also on Instagram and TikTok as well. But just to hammer home the point, the best way that you can help us out is either if you like a bet, click on the link and sign up for QuinBet, or for free, just leave us some nice words on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. If you can't even be bothered to do that, just hit the 5 stars and that helps other fans of the Football League find the show. We shall be back with another one next week for you, but that'll do it for today. Thanks to Sam. Thanks to Adrian. Mainly thanks to you for listening. Bye for now.